Welcome. You are listening to Park Avenue Podcasts, and this is Rabbi Elliot Cosgrove. While it's always better to hear it live, this is a place to be to catch the music, sermons, and select programs of Park Avenue Synagogue. If you like what you are hearing or want to learn more about the community, please check out our website at www.pasyn.org. Enjoy our latest installment.
Shabbat Shalom. Even rabbis, lest you think otherwise, turn to rabbis, other rabbis, for support. And if there was ever a week that as a rabbi was in need of another rabbi for support, counsel, and guidance, this past week was the one. Through the good services of the New York Board of Rabbis, I participated myself in a clergy-only Zoom conference call to speak openly about the challenges me and my colleagues were facing as we tended to the needs of our respective communities. Not all of us are congregational rabbis, of course. There were teachers and chaplains and administrators. The stories varied depending on the community. One rabbi, the chaplain to Rikers Island Prison, described the weighty choices being made in correctional facilities as to whether to keep inmates in isolation and to allow them to interact with other inmates and risk exposure. Another colleague, the chief chaplain in a local psychiatric facility, was explaining the isolation of the patients and the decisions being debated as to whether or not clergy and mental health professionals should or shouldn't provide psychosocial support in this time of social distancing, a darned if you do, darned if you don't kind of choice. One after another, my congregational colleagues exchanged stories of couples deciding whether to postpone a wedding or not, families asking counsel on what to do about long-planned B'nai mitzvahs, or whether it's better to have a bris in the hospital or wait until the eighth day and risk exposure. One colleague shared the story of a particularly acrimonious divorce in his community, in which a civil settlement between the parties that required the get, the Jewish divorce document, be executed within a certain time frame. A time frame now rendered impossible because if you know a little bit about Jewish law, in order to execute a get, you have to have multiple witnesses in the same room. What should be done, my colleague was being asked. So many stories, not to mention real-time management decisions being made by my colleagues to stay open or not, to hold services or not, to make budget or staff freezes or not. Our problems, if you will, were varied, but our state of mind was shared. So many decisions to be made, each one of consequence, each one with multiple stakeholders holding different opinions, each one needing to be made on the spot, and me and my colleagues a fire hose of decisions showing no signs of relenting. We were all worn down. We were all tired. We were all fatigued. I'm not sure if the call solved anything, but it was certainly therapeutic, if for no other reason to know that the pressures I faced this past week in my rabbinate aren't unique to me. Decision fatigue, a burden that I do not shoulder alone. This morning, I want to speak to you about the pandemic, not as a healthcare professional. My expertise is no more or less than any other non-medical professional. I want to speak from the perspective of a pastor and reflect on the many effects this public health crisis is having on all our psyches, individually and collectively. I read recently about a study that was being conducted by two researchers, Jonathan Leva of Stanford and Shai Danziger of Ben-Gurion University, that was entitled Extraneous Factors in Judicial Decisions. To make a long article short, the researchers evaluated the decisions being made by a parole board in the Israeli prison system. The pattern that Leva and Danziger discovered to be paroled or not had nothing to do, as it turned out, with the prisoner's ethnic background, the crime they committed, or the sentences they received. After analyzing over 1,100 decisions over the course of a year, they discovered that the greatest predictor was a time of day in which the case was heard by the parole board. Prisoners who appeared early in the morning were paroled 70% of the time more than those who appeared later in the day, less than 10% of the time. If your case was heard before lunch, your odds were far worse than after lunch. The paper received quite a bit of press at the time because on the one hand, it revealed the disquieting truth that the dispensation of justice could be contingent on levels of rest or glucose. But it also affirmed in that it documented something about the human condition that we all know intuitively to be true, namely that our ability to make decisions is a muscle, and that decision-making muscle, like any muscle, can become fatigued, it can become strained, it can give out on us, which is why we need to treat it well, with care, and with rest, and with caution. And as I read more about decision fatigue, I began to think of an endless number of examples in my life and all around. I thought of a doctoral advisor of mine in grad school, about whom I realized after my first semester in Chicago, should only be spoken to in the first half of the day, because no different than Israeli judges, I could ask him the very same question in the morning and get a totally different answer in the afternoon. I think of my dad, who once shared with me that he far prefers speaking to me on a Sunday night with the pressures of Shabbat behind me than on a Thursday night when I'm frantically trying to finish my sermon. I think of Moses, who upon leading the Israelites through the desert was castigated by his father-in-law Jethro for seeking to adjudicate all of the cases that were brought before him. What you're doing isn't right. You'll wear yourself out, Jethro tells Moses. It wasn't right for Moses and it wasn't right for Israel, who risked being led by a leader who was unable to call balls and strikes with a sound mind. What if, I wondered, we can point to the decision fatigue phenomena as a psychological explanation to the riddle of Pharaoh's hardened heart? To let Israel go would be to capitulate to Moses. To keep the Israelites enslaved would be to endure more plagues, a state of affairs that would paralyze anyone, even a pharaoh. Decision fatigue explains why from the very get-go of this week's taxonomy of sacrifices, there's an entire chapter on the varied offerings of unintentional and intentional sins. Leviticus was well aware that no one goes very far in life without a misstep in judgment. No doubt decision fatigue was behind Adam and Eve's ill-fated decision to eat of the fruit of the garden. No doubt decision fatigue is behind every ill-advised decision made after 2 a.m. since the beginning of time. As my physician once told me, it's not the calories of drinking wine that are the problem. It's the calories of all the ice cream you consume after you've had the wine, after your judgment is impaired. That is the problem. The effects of decision fatigue are everywhere in our lives. Mental exhaustion wrought by the task of making imperfect decisions, weighing pluses and minuses of any action, and making an imperfect choice in a short time, the consequences of which both we and others will have to live with. And it's that feeling, on steroids, which is how I believe we all feel right now. I can only speak to the pressures of being a rabbi. I cannot claim to speak with intelligence about other industries and walks of life. But I've spent much of the week hearing the stories of many members of our community. It's hard enough, I imagine, in the business world to juggle the variables that go into management decisions. But those variables have multiplied and turned erratic and rapid in ways people haven't seen in their lifetimes. Not just whether to buy or sell, but how to maintain a company remotely, how to treat employees when retirement plans have been materially impaired, or the looming question of exactly when a management team deems it safe or unsafe to reopen, weighing the relative risks of lost business versus employee health. What about the medical professionals debating the allocation of precious resources, including the most precious resource of all, themselves, towards patient care? At what point should someone should or shouldn't be admitted to the hospital, should or shouldn't be intubated. What about our personal lives? To work or to stay home? To see a parent or friend in need, if doing so puts us at personal risk? Maybe to give birth without a partner present, or give birth outside a hospital system where your partner can be present, but the mother could be at risk if there's a complication. And so on and on and on. Financial professionals, medical professionals, educators, delivery men and doormen, it's system overload for everyone, especially when we're working full speed 24/7 with no end in sight. You know, I wish, oh how I wish, more than you know, that I had the answer, that this would be the part of the sermon where I'd untie the knot and explain how we should all move forward. But I don't have the answer. I think all I can do, the best I can do, at least what I'm trying to do, is like my phone call earlier this week with my colleagues, is give voice to some of my anxieties, which may be some of your anxieties, which may just help us all realize that we're not alone, and we think that we can think of each other. And perhaps if we allow for the fact that each one of us, in our own respective lanes, are just doing our level best to make the wisest decisions we can based on the limited information and limited time we've been allotted, well, maybe we'll all be that much more patient, more forgiving, more communicative, and more trusting of ourselves and of others. None of us can do it alone, and we all need to have confidence that our colleagues and friends are operating with the very best of intentions, and we can't relitigate their judgment at the very moment that a cascade of new decisions are waiting to be made. It's not easy in the present environment, but we need to find ways to let that decision-making muscle rest and replenish through sleep, through exercise, through Shabbos, whatever means possible, so that the next decision we're asked to make will be made with as sound judgment as possible. These last few weeks have taught me much. Most of all, they've taught me how little I know and how little we all know about the present and the future. But I am getting the sense that this sprint is turning into a marathon, or possibly a marathon at the pace of a sprint. And if that's the case, and if it's our intention to see this through, then we'll have to build up the necessary emotional reserves and spiritual resources to go the distance. And to mix my metaphors, we all need to acknowledge that in this fight, we're all punching way above our weight. None of us hold the answers. So let's work together with humility, with courage, with trust, and with confidence, seeking to make our next imperfect decision and do the next right thing, and then the next, until one day, please God, we'll look back at this time saying, Gamze Yavor, it too has passed, a string of imperfect decisions that led us out of the wilderness and back to the perfectly imperfect normal lives to which we so long to return. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you for listening to Park Avenue Podcasts, a place to be to catch the music, sermons, and select programs of Park Avenue Synagogue. If you like what you are hearing or want to learn more about the community, please check out our website at www.pasyn.org. See you in shul.